This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Woohoo! It's Friday!
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. Dave, we missed you a little bit yesterday.
Yes, and I'm missing you today.
So I want to know, how was the In-N-Out Burger?
It was so awesome. It was so worth the 3 hour wait.
It was
literally 3 hours and 2 minutes before I got my double double with fries. Wow. and the shake. And of course I picked up several other
ones. 3 hours though, from the time you got in line until you drove away with the burgers, it was 3 hours.
Yes.
So you'd go back, you're saying?
Yes. You know, a lot of people yesterday. 5 o'clock hour, they were blocking up a lane on I-5, both directions. 45.
Dave, I lost you, but I'm going to try to correct this right away.
Oh, okay. 45. It was 45-minute delay on I-5 yesterday on the right lane because they wanted to get the exit to get to the In-N-Out Burger, which they then put everybody back into the Volcano Stadium, and then down and around the street through the left turn lane there all the way to the drive-thru. But wow. A couple of hours later, they were able to get their burgers. Can you hear me now?
Yep, we're all good now.
All right.
Technology. Well, I'm a person, I'm too impatient. I have this like attention deficit issue, and I don't know that I'd wait 3 hours for filet mignon. But I was sure happy when you came back to KBZY and brought us all burgers. So that was wonderful.
So where?
Good stuff. A lot of things to talk about today. It's Friday. Sometimes we handle lighter things. By the end of the hour, we'll be talking about the Kaiser and the parade and so forth. There's some news stories, some things happening in the community you want to talk about, not the least of which is Salem Health and its expansion, not just into Woodburn, but expansion on the campus that's been in the news. But I want to start out with something kind of interesting having to do with our culture on the national stage, if you don't mind.
Sure, why not?
So Voice of America, and I don't even know how I came across this, but it was an article or a column on Voice of America, and it had to do with us politically as a nation and how much, you know, we talk about how polarized we are and the assumptions that we make. I've talked about it a little bit about how we listen to the same voices over and over again. So Americans are living in this echo chamber because they'll go online and they'll get news from the same people all the time, and they'll just be echoing back and forth, and they'll only communicate on Facebook with people that share their views, and we're not sharing our views and arguing or debating with maybe some different perspective people. So this was really interesting because it does, if a Martian comes down here and observes America in the media, they would see us as being far more polarized than perhaps the country actually is. So in this Voice of America article, it says the Democrats and Republicans really overestimate the percentage of people who hold extreme views. So we tend to think like, well, those liberals or, oh, those conservatives, and all of the Democrats are. I know I'm sick of it. I'm sick of people saying, well, the Republicans are. I mean, to me, that sounds a lot like black people are.
Right.
I mean, you can't say that. Christians are. Oh, those Muslims are. Women are. You can't say that.
Got to stop using that.
Yeah, all Republicans are.
You got to stop using the broad strokes. Yeah.
Oh, so true.
Yeah.
So here's an example. Republicans think that almost half of Democrats, so they poll Republicans, and half of them say that Democrats believe the phrase, most police are bad people.
Wow.
So Republicans think that half of Democrats would agree with that statement. Most police are bad people. But the reality is when they poll the Democrats, only 15% agree with that statement, which is too high to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem with that nonetheless. But Republicans would say over three times as many Democrats hold that view that police are bad people. So on the flip side, Republicans will say, will agree with the statement that properly controlled immigration can be good for America, right? 85% of Republicans agreed with that statement, according to the polling. So 85% of Republicans agree with properly controlled immigration can be good for America. Democrats, what they think about Republicans is that half of the Republicans would feel that way. Well, and the other half, presumably, don't want any sort of immigration whatsoever, right?
Wow.
And, yeah, you know, we've talked about this. It's ridiculous to think that to say I am against all illegal immigration, or the simple, like, logical, rational comment that says I think that all immigration should be through legal channels is seen as racist and hateful and so on and so forth, and all the isms and so forth. But if you poll Republicans and Democrats on this specific issue, the specific statement, not nearly as many people have extreme views as we perceive them to have. So that gets people to believe that people on the other side, and we've heard this, Dave, right? Well, they're hateful.
Yes.
They're brainwashed.
All the time.
They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Just flat out epithets. And frankly, I don't know about you, but I've had to just mute or unfriend people on Facebook that are really hateful about people who disagree with them.
I totally agree. And I've done that myself, too.
So in the article, again, it's from Voice of America. This last quote, it says, people tend to consume news that reinforces and confirms their biases about people in opposing constituencies. So if they're more likely to have fewer false or exaggerated assumptions if they consume news from the other side. Here's the problem is, I can't watch some of those news programs. I'm not going to slam them here on air, but some of them I tune in, I'm like, oh my gosh, the language you're using and the assumptions that you're using, and I just can't listen to it. It's really difficult. It would help if we had
they just say things with no facts to back it up. Yeah. It's totally their opinion, and it's just like, I can't believe they just said that, and nobody said anything back to them saying, hey, that's not right.
Yeah, on the national stage this week and the last couple of weeks, it's like we talked about this in studio yesterday. It was the lawyers, the constitutional lawyers that came in to testify, and they said flat out blanket statements that President Trump demanded that the Ukraine president commit, you know, interfere with the elections. Well, no, he didn't. He said, can you look into this corruption? I understand that the Democrats are jumping to the conclusion that that's why he made the request. But if you listen to them and the language they say, you would think that President Trump called on the phone and said, hey, Ukraine, I demand that you help me win the next election. I want you to meddle in U.S. elections. That's how they're saying it. So the language is really just wrong.
Over the top.
But let's bring it back to local.
Okay.
This is the thing, and you know it bugs me, Dave. You know it bugs me, but this, we talk about discrimination and language and being hateful. I want to go right back to St. Lion's Church, right? Mm-hmm. And then the school district, I came across this article again recently, so it became top of mind. It's connected. The school district had to investigate, and the state had to investigate to see if the school district was being discriminatory by allowing some school meetings to take place inside a church building. Right. And that, well, church people, they might believe in one man, one woman. They might believe that marriage is a man and a woman. So therefore, their beliefs are discriminatory. And so therefore, we should not allow a school district or any government entity to do business with them or to rent their facility and so on and so forth. All right. So, Dave, what do you call it when you blackball people or organizations that don't agree with you? Would that be discrimination?
I'm pretty much.
It's like, how do you not see these people? Mm-hmm. You can't just say, oh, these people disagree with me. I have different views on sexuality and marriage than they do. So therefore, we must not do business with them. We must make sure that they are blackballed and shamed for their who's being discriminatory?
Yeah, right. They always claim that we're doing, or the other side's doing exactly what they're doing, but they accuse them of doing it. Oh, we're not doing that. You are. New. It's the other way around. You're doing it.
I don't think we've seen the last of this, and it's not the last time we'll talk about it. But if you are of faith background, if you're of any faith background, you really have to watch to make sure that suddenly the people who have belief systems aren't the people who are going to be discriminated against. You can't tell the government, you can't lease a building, you can't tell a school district, you can't rent rooms from people with faith because you don't agree with their faith. That's just like saying, oh, well, let's not hold our event in this place because it's owned by a gay couple.
That's ridiculous.
The same thing, right? Yeah. It's a hell thing. I don't agree with the gay couple's version of life or marriage between a man and a man or woman and a woman. I don't believe with them. So therefore, let's not. Oh, yeah, we need to discriminate against them. It's the same thing. You just can't flip it anyway. Which one is being hateful? That's my point. We're not going to talk about hateful anymore. We're going to talk about Salem Health. We're going to have to take a quick break. Go take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about Salem Health, not just in Woodburn, but what's about to happen in the center of town. It is huge news, huge investment, and perhaps more meaningful than you think. I'm Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and we'll be right back on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem. And Brent, before we get back to the stores, and the stories, I've got shopping on my mind now. I have family four packs of passes to the Capital City Classic. It's an all tourney pass. It happens starting next Wednesday, December 18th through the 23rd. So I have four tickets to Willamette University here in Salem for the Capital City Classic. First caller, 503-393-1430. You'll get a family four-pack. 503-393-1430. All right. And those are $35 tickets each. So,
wow. Four-pack.
Four-pack.
Right, great value.
Take the
great
family.
Thing to do.
Yeah,
take the family. Something to do for the holidays. All right. Hey, thanks for that. And, Dave, are we going to give away more one of those this hour?
I have another one to give away, yeah. Later this hour.
Have to stay tuned if they don't get this one.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, just before the break, I was mentioning Salem Health. It's been in the news. Hopefully you've seen it, that they're going to build a new tower. We talked about it just briefly. And also in the news, of course, Woodburn. There's a clinic that's opening in Woodburn that's owned by Salem Health to serve not just urgent care needs, but also primary care. And I've heard the CEO of Salem Health, Cheryl Nestor Wolf is her name, had the privilege of serving on the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors with her for a brief time before I came off. And great lady, comes from a nursing background. She's spoken to some community groups and continues to do these informational things about what the plans are for the hospital. So it's amazing how big this has become, Dave. It's amazing. We have, the busiest emergency department between San Francisco and I think they either said Seattle or Canada.
Wow, that's pretty big.
That is extraordinary, and it shows you how much need there is in the Mid-Valley for this. And it also kind of scary because as population, if we get another 60,000 people in the next 15 years, where are they going to get emergency room care? If they're going to certainly can't all come to Salem and have the capacity hold on to it.
Right.
The emergency department is not expanding at Salem Health. So we're going to have to be reliant upon, of course, Sandy M. Memorial, Silverton Hospital, which has new ownership, of course, and so forth. But the other thing that has to happen is people have to stop going to the emergency room.
Yeah, for cuts or colds or coughs or the flu,
abdominal pain, stitches, migraines, people who do not have health care. So in America, folks, in America, they're required by law to see anybody who walks in, and they need to you know, check them in. They need to see them and they need to medically clear them. And we talked yesterday about how 50% of the people who are going into the emergency room are homeless. And they may be coming in just to be warm. They may be coming in for a reason that's not emergency, obviously.
Food,
but
water.
They still are required to be seen by a medical professional and medically cleared before they're released. And that is a huge burden. So in the expansion, they're going to put in 150 new beds. Very exciting. Brand new beds for the hospital. It'll be the largest hospital in Oregon in that regard.
Nice.
The largest one in terms of number of beds that they have. And according to Cheryl Nestor Wolf, it'll be primarily to serve Medicare and Medicaid patients.
I'd like to talk to her again.
Yeah, she's leading an amazing organization that has an incredible footprint in our community. A lot of people don't realize how many clinics they own, how many doctors are under contract there, how many people they employ. And the other bit of news that's rolling into this next month, I think they're going to finalize it, is they're purchasing an independent physicians group.
What?
So they can have more ability and more viability for primary care doctors, because that's what we're missing. That's what America is missing, but we need it in the community too. We need primary care doctors, and we need their practices to be viable and vibrant and be able to see patients somewhere other than the hospital.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, she makes the point that Salem Health is it's a nonprofit. And she said flat out, it was at a recent SEDCOR meeting, flat out saying, if I were running a for-profit hospital, we would not be building this new tower.
Wow.
Yeah. Let that sink in for a second.
Okay.
It's only because they're a nonprofit and they view their role, they view their mission to provide the health care and make it available and plentiful and so forth. That's why they're going out of their way. I mean, it's not Salem Hospital anymore. It is Salem Health and all their multitudes of clinics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have their own primary care facilities that take patients and so forth, and they're buying some of the independent physicians groups and able to enlarge this footprint. Now they're going into Woodburn. I mean, it's not like they haven't had any presence there, but they're having a major presence there to do primary care. People go to see your own doctor and urgent care. And I'd like to get a guest on actually just to talk about some of the market forces in urgent care. I know my family's used them. Have you ever used an urgent care facility?
I have.
Yeah.
Very,
it's so much
very
easier
convenient.
Than going
very
to the
much,
emergency
yeah.
room.
Very convenient and quick and easy. No real line to wait for. It's, yeah, so much better.
So get ready. Hold on to your brain cells. Ready? So because of regulations in healthcare, if you go into the emergency room, they're not allowed to tell you that you should go to urgent care. They're not even allowed to tell you 300 feet away is an urgent care with no line.
Why is
so
that?
People.
Why is that again?
It has to do with protecting people's ability to get health care and that they're not turned away, right? So this is where do-gooder kind of, hey, we're gonna make this to protect everybody and so on and so forth. Then it goes over the line to the point where you're not even serving them. So you could be a staff person at Salem Health in the emergency department, and there's somebody sitting over there not doing very well, but they're not, you know, they're not high on the priority list because people are coming in ambulances, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've been there for 4 hours, and you literally can't tell them, if you walk over here 2 blocks, you can be seen right away for less money. They can't even tell them.
Something's wrong with that.
Yes, it is so wrong. Now, there should be a sign in front of the building that says, we have the emergency room, you can be seen, but 2 blocks away is urgent care. Some way to communicate that, but because of regulations, though, once they're in the building, they cannot even communicate it to them. That is crazy.
Yeah, it is.
That's when you're like, oh, yeah, there's a few too many regulations in healthcare in this regard. Can you believe it?
Yeah, no, I can't.
I mean, then people do. I mean, people come in for minor things because they don't have insurance, they do not have a doctor, and they need to be seen or want to be seen. But the emergency room is absolutely the most expensive way to get your treatment if you're paying the bill. And it's absolutely the most expensive way to provide healthcare in America. So if anything that we can do with our show, anything that we can do with our friends and family and awareness would be awesome, because people should go to urgent care.
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
All right. Let's talk about Woodburn a little bit, because it's kind of exciting for them to get into to expand. They said they took a look at how many people they were seeing that were from North County. And as we know, Newsmakers is reaching Marion and Polk counties. Maybe we stretch a little bit into Clackamas County and a little bit south of Lynn. But it's a Salem Health Clinic in urgent care. They're going to have pretty long hours. They said they're going to have open more hours than some of the other options in Woodburn. But frankly, they just looked in terms of how many people are traveling down I-5 from Woodburn to get treatment in Salem, and then they're trying to go to where the patients are. And they also look at the demographics, because that's a community that is also growing. This was interesting. I think it sounds like nearly everybody is going to be bilingual. As we all know, that Woodburn has a very strong component of Spanish speakers. Mm-hmm. Half of people that live in Woodburn speak Spanish in the house.
Wow.
Yeah, that's U.S. Census data, and so that's almost 10 years old, right?
Right.
We haven't talked about the census. It's 2020 next month.
and when they start the new census. Yeah.
Yeah. So according to U.S. Census data, half of the households in Woodburn speak Spanish at home. So Salem Health's going to hire bilingual English and Spanish. And they're going to be open, 8 to 10. So you can go in before work, after work, and so forth. And heck, we really want to encourage people to use this style. I mean, middle of the night is not fun in the urgent care.
No.
At the emergency room. In West County, there's an emergency room at West Valley Hospital, right?
Right.
And this is Polk County. There is an emergency room, but they don't have very... They're not open 24 hours.
Right.
So everybody from Dallas, all you folks in Dallas and Monmouth and Independence, and you have something that's not in convenient hours, you're driving over the bridge to get into Salem to get treatment.
The one bridge. Yeah.
The one bridge. All right. What are they going to do there? Salem Health. They're going to have 31,000 square feet. They're going to do family medicine, of course, x-rays, ultrasounds, mammography, physical therapy, obstetricians, and gynecologists. That's pretty impressive.
That is very impressive.
One of the things, and again, we're talking about Salem Health and Cheryl Nestor-Wolf's presentation to the chamber and to SEDCOR, that surprised me. She says, we really don't have any trouble recruiting to the Mid-Valley, that it's a very competitive place for doctors and other healthcare professionals to want to live for our quality of life, right? And that they're fairly successful. Of course, their wages, she says, are comparable to Portland wages, if not identical to Portland wages. So you can live in the Mid-Valley and not have the traffic, have all of these great Oregon options and lower cost of living, lower cost of housing, and make the same amount of money. Who wouldn't want to live in the Mid-Valley, right?
That's why we live here, right?
That's right.
Right? That's why I live in Oregon. Hello.
I think it is hard. I think it's hard to overstate the financial and the quality of life impact that the footprint of Salem Health has.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, by the way, before we take our break, a quick story about the In-N-Out Burger. I was standing, he was standing in the street directing traffic, and I asked him where he was from. And he was from San Bernardino, California. And he moved up here like 2 days ago. And it's one of the part of the crew that comes in and helps the grand opening of all the In-N-Out Burgers. Mm-hmm. And I said he loves this place. He expected it to be a little bit cooler, which it is, but the weather is pretty much the same here it is as it is there, just a little bit cooler. But he said the price of housing, he's saving 3/4 of what he was paying for rent, and food is like half the cost, along with gasoline, because California is just taxing them to death. It's so expensive to live there. I don't know how people survive.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
That is the standard. Well, we got to make sure that our food stays this way by continuing to grow it right here.
Right here.
All right. We got to take a break, right?
Yes.
All right. Then we'll come back and hit a few more things before we welcome Danielle Bethel to the studio in just a little bit. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers for Local Talk with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
I'm in a Christmas giving mood, Brent.
Give it away.
I'm going to give away another family four-pack of tickets to the Capital City Classic. It's an all-tourney pass for four people for general admission, December 18th, that's starting next Wednesday, through the 23rd at Willamette University. If you'd like to go to the Capital City Classic all-tourney pass here, for four people, 503-393-1430. First caller, 503-393-1430. Hunter, we'll take your name and address and or name and phone number, and you can come pick him up here at the station. We'll have more on Monday. All right.
Great. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. This is where you will be if you want to get local news and local topics here in the Mid-Willamette Valley. Thanks, Dave. Hey, I got something. We didn't even tease this or talk about this, but it's big news.
What's that?
It was actually Oregonian was covering this, and it has to do with the World Athletics Championship in Eugene. This is going to be one of the biggest things to happen in Oregon maybe ever.
Bigger than the Olympic trials?
Possibly. This thing has never been held in America.
Never?
Never been held in the United States.
And nobody's mentioned it.
It's in 2021. It's the World Athletics Championships in Eugene for track and field. So why it's in the news is that Kate Brown has been, you know, promoting this and encouraging this and making promises about this, that they would get $40 million from the state for this event. Right, to help support the necessary infrastructure and putting on the event, $40 million. Problem is, politically, she's only managed to swing about half of that.
What?
So now we're looking at, you know, and when you're talking about an event of this size, we're pretty close to it. I mean, it's just a year and a half out.
Right.
So anyway, we're close to somewhere between a year and a half to 2 years out. So she's very vocal and she's very, you know, positive and promoting this. But where's the other $20 million going to come from? Some of it's coming from hotel motel taxes, you know, the Travel Oregon kind of things. And there's obviously some subsidies that she's looking for, the piggy bank being the legislature and our tax dollars. Right.
Right.
You kind of have mixed feelings about this a little bit in terms of, you know, there's. On the plus side, it's huge for marketing and tourism, right?
Right.
Have people from all over the world come to Oregon and do business with Oregon businesses. The impact, however, is less in Oregon than it would be in so many other places because we don't have a sales tax. So the visitors that come, sure, they'll be paying the hotel tax. There might be a little bit of bump in transportation in terms of gasoline tax, but everywhere else, like if this is in California, maybe they're paying another 9% in taxes and everything that these hundreds of thousands of visitors are going to spend, right? So that lessens the impact somewhat in terms of our financial gain, but it's huge news, and I could see how Oregon is really excited about it and be a feather in their cap, but it is an issue in the $20 more million that they need to pull out of nowhere, right? And then they'll turn around and say, we don't have enough money for schools, right? Or they'll pass the corporate activities tax or the son of the corporate activities tax or the cigarette tax. And all of these things that they did, they raised these billions of dollars saying there's not enough money to do these things. Oh, but could somebody write a check for $20 million? We'll just go back. Are they just going to go back to the taxpayers and say, we need to raise some more taxes because we promised all this money? And it's a bit of a stretch, but it's a philosophical thing where it's like, yeah, we'll just use this government money for this, and we don't really know where it's going to come from.
That sounds like our government.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Another, speaking of taxes and how this relates to taxes, and I think it's really cool. This is going to be here, by the way. I'm not slamming that they've gone out and recruited it, but this usually happens in major communities. I mean, Beijing and London and, you know, Paris, huge capitals, world capitals are usually handle this kind of event, and they can handle that kind of flood of tourists. We're talking about Eugene, Oregon. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to have every hotel room from Medford to Portland book, probably. I mean, I don't know. That's a tall order. And so I hope they can pull off and they're doing well. But all right, back to taxes. So the article claims that they have to fix a tax issue, which I thought was really fascinating. People say things as fact when they're opinion. They must fix a tax issue. So under United States and Oregon law, the article says, there's $7.2 million in winnings for athletes, right, in this event. $7.2 million that will be awarded as winnings for the athletes. And then under our laws, they're taxable for Oregon state tax and United States income tax. Those things are taxed. In other areas, other governments have forgiven the tax and not collected it. Well, Oregon hasn't done anything about that. So the implication of the article is that the legislature is going to have to act to make the athletes exempt from the tax. My question is, why? What do you think? Should they be subject to the taxes of Oregon if they're going to come and compete here and earn part of the prize winning money of $7.2 million?
Yeah. I mean, if you're in there to compete, you should be paying the costs as everyone else, right?
Yeah, so you don't have a sales tax. Is Oregon really going to forego the income tax as well? So they're not paying any property tax, obviously. They're not going to pay any sales tax, but they're going to come here from all over the world, and we're going to pay for this event to come here. Where's the gain?
Yeah,
how is this good for Oregon? You can say it's good for Oregon tourism, and these people will be back. I will tell you that I know it's a financial impact because this is money coming from elsewhere, all over the world, and it's coming into the Oregon economy, and they're going to be buying from Oregon stores and business owners,
right,
and so forth. I like that. I like it. But then it's a one-time event.
So maybe the Oregon Tourism Council or whatever should be forking it out. We pay into them, right? That's what this is all about?
Oh, they are.
Oregon Tourism?
Of the $20 million that she's already committed, I think, and don't hold me to this, listener, we're going to have to look it up, but I think about half of that is already committed from Travel Oregon funds.
That's good.
Yeah, it's funded by hotel, motel taxes.
Okay.
The tourism taxes.
Still.
So another issue is part of the hotel taxes that she's relying to pay on this is sunsetting next year. So she's going to need, by she, I mean Governor Brown, she's going to need the legislature to act, probably in the short session, to extend the sunsetting so that the hotel motel taxes doesn't go out and can no longer fund this. Right. Really interesting thing about this. A lot of things are interesting about this. The fact that this is usually held in London and Paris and Beijing and world capitals. The fact that it's coming to Oregon. The fact that it's never been in the U.S. And the fact that the governor's brand is $40 million without identifying where it's coming from.
Right.
Senate President Peter Courtney, he has concerns about the whole thing. And he's not like jumping up and down and clapping and say, let's do this. He's not helping find the money. He's like, this is just the beginning. And he's worried it's going to be like many other government things that blow up and end up costing a lot more. And who's going to pay for it? And where's the money going to come from?
Well, Mike, I have lots of questions here, actually. Yeah. So first of all, if it's being held, usually being held at world capitals around the world, who courted it to Oregon, first of all, and then who courted it to Eugene? That sounds like Nike. Sounds like Phil Knight. So maybe he should be writing a bigger check. Just saying.
I think there's more to be learned.
There is. A couple of years from now, we'll find out.
All right. Well, we got to talk to Danielle, right?
Yes, we do. She's waiting patiently here.
All right. Let's go to break. Real quick, one last thing before we go to break is the quote from Senator Courtney. He's worried, quote, it'll be in the hundreds of millions of dollars before it's over. I'm telling you right now, we don't know how much they're going to need, and we have no idea where the money's coming from.
Corporations.
Yeah, very interesting perspective from Peter Courtney, and I hope the Democrats don't just turn to their usual source of the solution for all problems is the government.
Keep your hands off my kicker.
Oh, yeah, they're going to take it out of Dave's kicker.
That's right.
We're going to talk about Danielle Bethel of Kaiser Chamber of Commerce right after this break, so stick with us on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by the fine folks at Sylvan Learning Center. And by the way, just a reminder, Monday I have two more family four-packs of tickets to the Capital City Classic All-Tourney Pass. We'll be giving those away again on Monday. All right. And joining us now in the studio, because we have a huge event coming up tomorrow, is the Kaiser Festival Lights Parade, right?
Kaiser Holiday Lights Parade.
Sure, change the name on me.
Okay. No. Festival happens in May. This is the Holiday Lights Parade.
Holiday Lights Parade, okay.
Yeah.
I like to call it the Christmas Lights Parade, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So it's coming up tomorrow. I'm driving the van in it.
Nice.
And I found out we're in slot 50, Brent. 50.
Slot 50.
50 out of quite a few.
Yeah, we have 60 entries, so not that many.
So you put me near the end.
I did. I put you at the end. Save the best for last, right?
Oh, man.
Are you going to have flashing lights all over the KYKN?
Of course. We're going to decorate it. Chris Link and I are going to decorate it and drive it in the parade. So
excellent.
Maybe we might win something. You never know.
I am not a judge in this. I'm a little judgy, but I'm not the judge.
You are judgy.
I have a high expectation of participation in this parade because imagine if you were just a little person on the side of the road and you come in for floats and then you see a vehicle that's just got a few lights on it. Like, that's kind of boring.
That's going to be our van. Just a few lights.
No. I expect better.
Okay. All right. I'll whip out all the lights that the inverter can handle.
Fine. You could go over to Cherry City Audio and Tent and talk to them. They've got their truck all decked out in lights. They've got it figured out. Yeah, just right over here on River Road. They help copycats as well.
All right. So tell Brent and I and everyone else details about what's going on with the parade, when the streets close, from where to where, the time, when people should get to the street, where and when.
Okay, so tomorrow at 3 p.m., Lock Haven from River Road to McClure will be closed. That's where parade staging is. And that's the Lock Haven section that's just north of McNary High School for those that are not familiar with Kaiser.
So I got to be there before 3?
You know, if you show up before 3, you're going to hang out in a parking lot or a side street because Lock Haven will be open until 3 p.m. So we close at 3 p.m. River or Lock Haven. And then if you want to be in the parade to be judged as an entry, judging starts at 5. So you'll want to have your float all ready to go by 5 p.m. So Mayor Clark and the Kaiser Chamber President, Jonathan Thompson, and Mr. Dave Wallery can come around and do all the judging.
Okay.
And then River Road itself will close from Lock Haven to Apple Blossom at 6 p.m. And then there won't be a lot happening for the first 10 minutes because cars come off of the side streets. They come out of businesses. And the police department needs to make sure there's a safe space. And then the Jingle Dash will begin approximately 6:15. And that starts out of the Kaiser Chamber parking lot. And it will head north down River Road. And it will turn at Chamawa by Boucher's Jeweler and come back South River Road, loop around some neighborhood streets behind Abby's Pizza, and return and finish at the chamber office.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, and that usually takes about 45 to 50 minutes.
An hour and a half for me.
I don't run, so I don't really know.
I don't either.
So. I mean, I ran here today.
That's you sound a little out of breath. So.
Yeah. So for folks to show up for the parade, we've been taking a lot of calls this week as to how early should we get there to set up our chairs. It turns out there's going to be a lot of people coming from out of town. There's lots of media around a local business that just opened that folks are wanting to participate in that activity and then come watch the parade after. So there is an ordinance in Kaiser that asks for people to not, you know, obstruct the right of way, which is the space between the street and the sidewalk, and then make sure the spaces are ADA accessible. But you'll see locals putting up chairs all along River Road.
There's a city ordinance for that?
Well, there's a city ordinance in general about protecting the right-of-ways and the access for folks. And that ordinance doesn't get suspended for the parade because the day has to happen in the public in general. Once the road is closed at 6 p.m., that ordinance is suspended for the period of the time that the parade exists, which is approximately 9 p.m. But before that, it's a city functioning as usual. So you'll see folks putting up tents and business parking lots. Those individuals have asked permission of those businesses to tailgate, if you will, in that space. So we encourage you to do that. Call your favorite local business along River Road and ask if you can participate in their parking lot and set up early there. And just be respectful. And a lot of folks are expecting it, so I'm sure they'll welcome you. For locations that are specifically hosting access for parade goers, Copycats on River Road is hosting cocoa and cider for free.
Nice.
Gino Corridori, the farmer's agency, which is across from the Little Caesars on River Road, he's opening up his office, cocoa, cider, warm heat, restrooms.
Mm, important.
That's right. Remodeling by Classic Homes, which is a little further north from there, is going to have a little fireplace, s'mores, cocoa, and a food truck.
Wow.
The Big Noodle will be there.
It.
That's right. O'Reilly's Auto Parts is going to be hosting Bridgeway Cafe, a rolling food truck in their parking lot. And then across the street a little ways down, the Marion County Republicans are going to be hosting a cocoa and Constitution's booth in the parking lot of Columbia Bank.
Cocoa and Constitution.
Hey,
yeah.
That's, that is a good one. Yeah,
it is. You can thank Jessica for that. It was a good play on words.
That was.
Yeah. And then Willamette Valley Bank further down River Road on the northern end is hosting in their parking lot. They'll have heaters, cocoa, cider, cookies, and a food truck.
Wow.
And that's just in addition to all the other businesses that are hoping to serve folks in the community. And on our Facebook page for the Kaiser Holiday Lights page today, I listed off all the Kaiser Chamber member restaurant businesses that are hoping to see an uptick in customers.
Now, but the major question I have, because I discovered this yesterday, waiting for an In-N-Out Burger for 3 hours, restrooms. Where are the restrooms for people to use?
Well, we don't put out restrooms in the community for folks to use because there's like 45,000 people that come to town for this parade, and that's really not manageable.
So businesses
so again,
in the area?
It's go be a customer of a local business, be respectful of their space, clean up after yourself, spend some money, you know, be gracious and grateful to the fact that they're opening their doors. And,
right.
Yeah, be a good patron.
Okay. All right. The parade starts at 7.
Correct.
And come see the run, too. It's 6:15, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Last week, you had Kick and Cancer on here, and they're going to host a little fun activity out of JC's parking lots to support that.
Oh, that'll be all kinds of fun. It's all starting tomorrow. I'll see you there. Thank you, Danielle Bethel, Kaiser Chamber of Commerce. And Brent, we'll see you on Monday.
Thank you.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.